Well, good afternoon to all. I'll speak in English and after in Portuguese also, because we are in Portugal. I'd like to, first of all, to say hello to you and to welcome you to Portugal and Portuguese Parliament. It's a pleasure to receive you here. This meeting is a meeting of the Portuguese United Kingdom Parliamentarian Group of Friendship, but also a meeting, a joint meeting with the Defense Committee. I know you had a fantastic lunch before this meeting. I hope you enjoyed it. But above all, I hope this visit is a profitable one in order to strengthen the ties between our two countries. I think that's the main issue of this visit. There are historical links, as you know, between Portugal and the United Kingdom. We are the old allies. And this visit is a fundamental tool in order to improve and revitalize that old alliance. I would like to say that the Peninsular War is a very important in historical matter, a very important field of our cooperation. We had before that a kind of economical and diplomatic cooperation, as you know. I remember the Mitwin Treaty that was previous of Peninsular War. But the Peninsular War made real the cooperation between our two countries in the field. And I think there are important lessons that we must need to give as acquired, as an acquis, a fundamental acquis of that cooperation. Not only in defense matters, of course, because I think it was a very interesting experience for English troops, but also for Portuguese armed forces. But in diplomatic field, I think the main result, main outcome of the Peninsular War was the diplomatic and political outcome of that war that stopped the progress of Napoleon and in a certain way reshaped the future of Europe at that time. We must not forget that. So this is only a reflection of my own, a very brief reflection, what I want to give the floor to the British delegation, Lord Dubs, all the members of the old parliamentary group on Portugal. I would like to know, of course, also your perspective and what are your wishes concerning this visit. You have the floor, please.
Can I say, first of all, thank you very much indeed. Shall I go slowly for the sake of the language? Georgia, thank you very much indeed. It's quite a long time ago since we first met in London, and I want to thank you on behalf of the delegation for having arranged this visit, for having facilitated the meetings. It's already been extremely useful and successful for us, and I hope that it betokens a time of even closer cooperation between the British and the Portuguese parliaments. We're anxious to have that cooperation. When we had a meeting with the British Embassy earlier today, you know, there are very few problems or difficulties between the two countries. That doesn't mean we don't want good cooperation. And when we met the people concerned with the Torres sites and so on this morning, there are a lot of things that possibly we can do to help. And we've got a little agenda of things we'll try and do in London to help in the development and of the sites which we're going to see tomorrow. But in the meantime, we're here, as it were, to discuss with you. I wonder, should we introduce the delegation? Can we just each just say very briefly who we are, please, so that our Portuguese colleagues know that? Well, you better start with you.
Hello, I'm John Kraus. I'm from the embassy. I'm the deputy head of mission.
I'm Dennis Rogan. I come from Belfast, Northern Ireland, an Ulster Unionist, and I sit in the House of Lords.
I'm Fred Punsonby. I sit in the House of Lords. I'm a member of the Labour Party.
Tim Boswell. I'm a Conservative Member of Parliament for Daventry in the English Midlands. I'm also on the Defence Committee of the WEU.
I'm Lynn Golding. I was in the Commons for 15 years. I've now been in the House of Lords for what seems like eternity.
I'm chair of the old party, a British Portuguese parliamentary group, and I used to be in the Commons. I'm now in the Lords. I'm Labour. And on my left is John Roper. I should say that he's chair of the old party War Graves and Battlefields Heritage Group. And in fact, our delegation is a joint delegation of that group and the old party Portuguese group. And when we first met and we had discussions at your great embassy in London, we were talking about the interests of both the groups in terms of a possible visit here. John.
Thank you. My name is John Roper. I am Lord Deputy Chairman of Committees in the House of Lords and Chairman of the European Union Committee. But I have had a considerable interest in defence matters for some time, and therefore I think it's extremely useful that as part of our visit we are having the meeting this afternoon with members of the Defence Committee, because of course we had a remarkable period during the Cold War when as members of NATO we knew exactly what we were doing and working together. I remember my first visit to Portugal was in 1955, when I was serving in a British frigate doing anti-submarine work, and of course the waters around the Azores were some of the most interesting waters for anti-submarine warfare, and so we exercised there for a while and I visited the Azores. But throughout the Cold War period our cooperation in Iberland and elsewhere was something which has been exemplary. And I think it is very important for both of us this afternoon, that's why I think this meeting is so useful, is for us to try and reflect in the context of the changes which have occurred in the post-war world, the new challenges, but also the new opportunities. The fact, for example, that France has reintegrated itself into NATO, and therefore some of the competition which seemed to exist between the European Union and NATO is no longer as acute as it was. And we need to look at new ways in which we can transform and use our armed forces to deal with the current problems, whether they're the questions of piracy in Aden and elsewhere, where I know that Portugal has played a very prominent part in terms of commanding the NATO flotilla which has been there, but also in Afghanistan, where there have been already important Portuguese contributions and where there are going to be increasing ones. But more we need to think about how we should try and develop and transform our armed forces, how we can perhaps provide forces for European Union battle groups as well as for NATO. And therefore I'm really very pleased that our meeting is going to have a chance to address some of these critical contemporary problems. If I can now let you into a secret, As I said to the chairman at lunch, you know, it's almost always been the case that the real enemy for the chairman of the Defence Committee was not his political opponents in the committee, it was the people in the Ministry of Finance. And my impression is it's not only in London that is the problem.
Okay. Chris Ruan, Labour MP for the Vale of Clwyd, which is in Wales.
I'm Andrew Dismore, a Labour Member of Parliament for Hendon, which is in North London.
And John Grogan, Labour Member of Parliament for Selby, which is in the north of England in Yorkshire.
Thank you very much. Permitam-me agora que fale em português. Estamos no Parlamento Português. Esta é a nossa língua, que muito nos honra. E eu gostaria também de apresentar a delegação portuguesa. Eu próprio sou o presidente do Grupo de Amizade Portugal-Reino Unido. Sou também o presidente da Comissão de Orçamento e Finanças, aqui da Assembleia da República. Fui secretário de Estado da Defesa, e daí também a minha ligação às matérias da defesa, e sou ainda atualmente vice-presidente de um subcomitê da NATO ligado às questões estratégicas de segurança na área de defesa. Tenho, obviamente, para além desta relação direta com o Reino Unido, onde tive a oportunidade de estudar, e daí também a minha ligação com o Reino Unido, e estudei numa universidade que muito me orgulha, que é a London School of Economics. Tenho também esta ligação à defesa decorrente do exercício dessas minhas funções no governo, no passado, e portanto são matérias que me interessam em particular e permitam-me, já agora antes de passar a palavra àquele que também é um especialista em assuntos de defesa no nosso país, que é o Presidente da Comissão de Defesa, Júlio Miranda Calha, aqui que tenho ao meu lado, permitam-lhe que lhes dê apenas uma nota a título pessoal que importa aqui expressar. Eu tive a oportunidade nos últimos 4 anos, enquanto Vice-Presidente e até Presidente Interino deste Subcomitê de Defesa da NATO, de viajar por diversos países do leste europeu, concretamente países que antigamente estavam sob a égide do Bloco Soviético. Nessas reuniões convivi a miúdo com deputados ingleses e queria aqui expressar o meu reconhecimento pela qualidade e pela profundidade técnica e política desses mesmos deputados. Independentemente do seu quadrante político, conservadores, liberais, trabalhistas, eu tenho que expressar o meu reconhecimento pela qualidade ímpar desses deputados ingleses. Eram, de facto, deputados muitíssimo bem preparados nessa área, o que significa, naturalmente, que o Reino Unido também faz um grande investimento nas questões de política externa e nas questões de defesa, o que também não é por acaso, faz jus ao seu historial. Mas esse é um facto que eu gostava aqui de registar. Não vou, naturalmente, porque não é meu timbre, estar a fazer nomeações ad hominem desta ou daquela pessoa, não é esse o meu género, nessa forma de estar na vida, nem muito menos na política, não farei essas nomeações, mas gostava que transmitissem aos vossos colegas da NATO, que integram as relações da NATO, o meu apreço muito particular pela qualidade, pela proficiência, pela expertise únicas que demonstraram em todos os azimutos, nas reuniões que tive a oportunidade de realizar por essa Europa de leste fora. Passo agora a palavra ao Presidente da Comissão de Defesa, como disse, um expert em assuntos da defesa, um antigo secretário de Estado da Defesa também, um presidente da Comissão de Defesa da Assembleia Parlamentar da NATO e um grande amigo meu, Júlio Miranda Calha. Tenho a palavra.
Houve aqui um conjunto de adjetivos que foram um pouco superiores àquilo que é a qualidade do interlocutor neste momento. Mas, de qualquer modo, eu quero agradecer aqui ao meu amigo Jorge Neto, que aliás nos encontramos muitas vezes. Aliás, fizemos uma visita à Austrália, os dois precisamente na Comissão de Segurança e Defesa, e aliás, na sequência dessa mesma visita, nós sabemos que na próxima Assembleia Parlamentar da NATO em Edimburgo vai estar presente uma delegação da Austrália, o que obviamente tem um resultado positivo para a nossa visita à Austrália, mas digamos que agora estamos noutro contexto e eu queria naturalmente saudar nesta oportunidade, agora mais uma vez, e em português, visto que ao almoço falámos todos em inglês, mas em português, a todos aqueles que vêm nesta delegação, que vêm visitar Portugal, fazer contacto com as suas instituições e também visitar alguns locais históricos deste nosso país, históricos que têm a ver precisamente com a história conjunta de Portugal e também do Reino Unido. Como já tive a oportunidade também de referir, nós estamos neste último ano a comemorar os 200 anos sobre a Guerra Peninsular, que foi um momento decisivo da história da Europa e do mundo, em termos precisamente da evolução desse mundo. E nós organizámos aqui uma conferência onde houve experts a participar de diversos países, incluindo também os Estados Unidos da América e também o Reino Unido, que fizeram uma análise e uma observação sobre os acontecimentos dessa época, que são muito relevantes e que também nos ajudam a compreender melhor a evolução das coisas, a evolução e os desenvolvimentos que se deram no mundo, não só em termos de independência de países, foi por essa altura e na sequência dessa situação que o Brasil passou a ser um grande país independente, mas foi também nessa altura que se afirmaram muito os valores da democracia e da liberdade e também por essa altura começaram-se a delinear os primeiros passos na Revolução Industrial. Portanto, tudo isso é um período extremamente interessante das nossas histórias e da nossa história, e que obviamente vale a pena refletir e pensar até em termos de projeção de futuro. Por outro lado, também quero dizer que na qualidade de Presidente da Comissão de Defesa, nós temos aqui desenvolvido muito trabalho que tem a ver não só com a nossa presença na NATO e participação na NATO. Nós participamos em muitas operações a nível da NATO, não só no Afeganistão, mas estivemos na Bósnia, estivemos no Kosovo, também sobre a égide das decisões das Nações Unidas e da União Europeia. Estamos no Líbano, estamos em África e temos tido uma participação efetiva. Aliás, a participação no Afeganistão foi sublinhada porque penso que éramos nós e era o Reino Unido os únicos que tínhamos uma força no terreno sem caveats, o que é uma demonstração também da nossa maneira de estar em termos precisamente da nossa presença nessas mesmas situações. Por outro lado, também tive a oportunidade de receber aqui elementos do gabinete do Primeiro-Ministro, Gordon Brown, e penso também de um chefe de Estado-Maior, penso que do Exército, precisamente para termos uma troca de impressões sobre a evolução dos acontecimentos no Afeganistão. É uma das ações primeiras em termos da NATO, é uma ação muito importante o que se está a fazer nesse mesmo país, um pouco longe das nossas áreas, mas muito importante em termos daquilo que é a paz e segurança mundiais. E, portanto, nessas trocas de impressões também tivemos uma possibilidade de analisar e, ao mesmo tempo, também aquilatar daquilo que era essa presença e da necessidade dessa presença, precisamente, em termos da NATO, nesse mesmo país do Afeganistão. Por outro lado, também, é evidente que nós, nas questões da defesa, acompanhamos não só as questões da NATO, ainda recentemente, nós tivemos aqui a mudança de comando em Oeiras, nós temos o Joint Command Lisbon, e na segunda-feira foi feita a transferência do comando, normalmente era um oficial americano, desta vez tomou posse, portanto, um general francês, precisamente dentro do processo de integração da França na estrutura militar da NATO. Mas, por outro lado, também acompanhamos todas as questões que têm a ver com a evolução da política europeia de segurança e defesa, que é também uma questão muito importante e que resulta precisamente também daquilo que foram os acordos de Saint-Malo e que tiveram como protagonistas essenciais o próprio Reino Unido e a França e que, portanto, deu origem a que houvesse uma consensualidade e uma evolução neste mesmo processo. Portanto, estamos a falar das questões que têm a ver com a Comissão de Defesa e com o trabalho que nós desenvolvemos. Obviamente que também estamos de acordo que normalmente nesta área há uma larga consensualidade, só alguns partidos mais da extrema esquerda é que, digamos, têm posições contrárias em relação à questão das políticas de defesa, não é? Aliás, eles próprios dizem ou consideram que o país devia sair da NATO, que não devia estar neste ou naquele teatro de guerra, etc. Portanto, são posições, enfim, respeitáveis, mas completamente diferentes daquilo que é a maioria e a consensualidade maioritária em relação a estas matérias, que tem expressão na Comissão de Defesa, mas também tem a expressão a nível do país. E, portanto, estamos de acordo que, havendo esta mesma consensualidade, obviamente que o inimigo, e estou de acordo com o Lord Roper, quando diz que normalmente é o Ministério das Finanças, porque, enfim, o Ministério das Finanças normalmente é o inimigo de todos os departamentos, porque, enfim, é quem tem os meios financeiros e que, com quem tem que se negociar sempre aquilo que vai para os diversos departamentos. Mas, enfim, aquilo que tem sido a evolução na área da defesa, podemos considerar que era positiva e a expressão clara dessa perspectiva positiva é o facto de nós participarmos em tantas missões e participarmos de uma maneira muito forte e muito conseguida em relação àquilo que devemos fazer como membros da NATO, membros da União Europeia, mas especialmente como membros da NATO, da qual nós, aliás, somos também fundadores. Portanto, estas primeiras palavras em relação às questões da defesa, é óbvio que, estando ligado à defesa, tínhamos que falar desta mesma componente, mas dizer também nesta oportunidade, temos muito gosto que sejam aqui, e, embora agora falando das questões da atualidade, é bom também a gente pensar sempre naquilo que se passou há 200 anos, porque foi muito importante o que se passou há 200 anos para a Europa e para o mundo, e, portanto, é sempre positivo fazer essa mesma reflexão. Portanto, muito obrigado, naturalmente, depois de ter estado disposto às questões que queiram colocar, e agora acho que poderiam os meus colegas fazer a respectiva apresentação, que são membros da Comissão de Defesa. Passo a palavra, portanto, ao Sr. Vice-Presidente da Comissão, o Sr. Deputado Correia de Jus, que, aliás, foi meu antecessor como Presidente desta mesma Comissão. Na altura eu era o Vice-Presidente e ele era o Presidente, agora sou o Presidente e é ele o Vice-Presidente.
É a alternância perfeita, a alternância perfeita em termos democráticos. Depois, uma palavra de saudação para todos os nossos colegas do Parlamento Britânico. Eu sou Manuel Filipe Correia de Jesus, como o meu colega Miranda Calha acaba de dizer, sou o Vice-Presidente da Comissão de Defesa e certamente que não vou elaborar sobre as questões que aqui já foram referidas, mas permitia-me chamar a atenção dos colegas para um ponto que normalmente está omisso nestes encontros bilaterais que se debruçam sobre as questões da defesa. Era chamar a atenção para o facto de Portugal ser um país que tem duas regiões autónomas, a Madeira e os Açores, porque há tendência para se ver Portugal apenas na sua perspectiva continental. E falando para colegas que são de uma ilha, nada mais apropriado do que lembrar que Portugal tem duas regiões autónomas, a Madeira e os Açores, e se chama a atenção para este ponto é para realçar a importância geoestratégica dessas duas regiões autónomas. A importância geoestratégica de tal forma assinalável que Portugal, sem as regiões autónomas da Madeira e dos Açores, do ponto de vista geoestratégico, estaria, de algum modo, confinado à Península Ibérica e o pequeno retângulo que é o Portugal continental diluir-se-ia no espaço imenso do nosso país vizinho, que é a Espanha. Portanto, grande parte da individualidade geoestratégica de Portugal deve-se à existência das duas regiões autónomas da Madeira e dos Açores. E a este propósito, permito-me lembrar que na Guerra dos Seis Dias entre Israel e o Egito, as forças armadas britânicas utilizaram o aeroporto do Porto Santo, na Madeira, no arquipélago da Madeira, para transportar as suas tropas para o Médio Oriente. E que, na Primeira Guerra do Golfo, não só a Madeira, como também os Açores, desempenharam um papel de primordial importância. Portanto, este ponto gostaria, na verdade, de referir. E ainda acrescentaria que Portugal é o país da União Europeia que tem a mais ampla zona económica exclusiva. E que essa amplidão, essa grandeza, deve-se ao facto de haver dois arquipélagos no Atlântico que, por assim dizer, potenciam essa extensão imensa da zona económica exclusiva portuguesa. Penso que os colegas gostarão de registar este aspecto porque, sem o seu conhecimento, ficariam com uma ideia incompleta acerca do Portugal que nós aqui representamos. Muito obrigado.
Muito boa tarde a todos. Eu chamo-me João Gaspar, sou deputado, membro da Comissão de Defesa e pertenço ao grupo parlamentar do Partido Socialista. aproveito a oportunidade para saudar todos os presentes britânicos. É com muito gosto que os recebemos na nossa casa, da nossa Casa da Democracia.
Chamo-me Mário Mourão, sou deputado pelo Partido Socialista, pelo Círculo Eleitoral do Porto e queria desde já felicitar-vos por esta visita ao nosso país. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Já tive o prazer de conhecer-vos ao almoço. Sou João Rebelo, sou vice-presidente da Comissão de Defesa e represento o CDS, que é o Partido Conservador em Portugal e Democrata Cristão. E bem-vindo aqui à nossa comissão.
Eu chamo Fernando Pratas, sou membro do Partido Socialista, membro da Comissão de Defesa também. Muito prazer em receber-vos nesta Casa da Democracia. Muito obrigado.
Chamo Paulo Matos, como o Sr. Presidente da Comissão de Defesa referiu, sou deputado recém-chegado a esta Assembleia da República pelo Grupo Parlamentar do Partido Social Democrata. Também desejo naturalmente as boas-vindas a este grupo parlamentar do Reino Unido. Muito obrigado.
Mário Patinha Antão, do Partido Social Democrata, ex-secretário de Estado da Saúde e ex-presidente da Comissão de Orçamento e Finanças. Contrariamente àquilo que é habitual nas personalidades das finanças, eu julgo que a matéria do orçamento dedicado à defesa deve ter uma atenção particular e não ser objeto de restrições excessivas. Os governos tendem, e particularmente os ministros das Finanças, a ter um comportamento demasiado restritivo e num contexto europeu há comportamentos do tipo free ride behavior, no sentido de que cada país procura, do ponto de vista do seu contributo orçamental para a defesa, o seu conjunto, com uma minimização do respectivo esforço. Essa é uma orientação, do meu ponto de vista, errada. Penso que a Europa está num momento em que, face aos desafios da sua afirmação e ao estado dos conflitos no mundo, terá que ter, por parte da política de defesa, numa perspectiva concertada e harmonizada, um papel na década que aí vem maior. Gostaria de sublinhar que, não dedicando grande atenção aos temas da defesa, considero que é inescapável, no quadro parlamentar, que elas tenham uma posição dominante face ao contexto internacional, particularmente face a este contexto internacional em que vivemos. E queria sublinhar, a título pessoal, que considero que a relação de afinidade e de amizade luso-britânica, que tem uma tradição tão longa, é particularmente importante e frutuosa para poder ajudar que, no contexto europeu, exista uma forma de pensar a defesa mais adequada aos desafios que todos enfrentamos. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado a todos. Eu deixo a palavra ao Lord Dubs, querendo, para fazer mais algumas considerações. De qualquer modo, eu gostaria de adiantar que esta visita está no seu início.
Claro.
E eu gostaria, naturalmente, de expressar os votos de que ela decorra de forma frutuosa e profícua e, sobretudo, que no final tenha constituído um marco indelével no relacionamento entre os dois países para reforçar os laços já de si sólidos e históricos entre Portugal e o Reino Unido. É esse o meu wishful thinking, que eu espero que naturalmente seja uma realidade.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sure that this will strengthen enormously the relationship between our two countries and our two parliaments, and we'll build on that from now on. So thank you for that. What I would suggest is perhaps my colleagues might like to ask you a few questions. I think that might be the easiest way rather than any statements. So can I ask my colleagues if they would like to, if they have any comments or questions that they'd like to make? Yes, Tim.
Just to open that up. Just to open up the discussion, and we've had a very comprehensive briefing from you.
Can I ask you what I might call a cultural question? We have had a very long period of major peace in Europe, and paradoxically, our wars have been seen as colonial wars, rather in the old-fashioned style. And, as you know, we have no conscription in the United Kingdom, and the effect is that the footprint, as we would say, of our armed first forces has diminished considerably in the general public. Now, perhaps that has changed a little bit with recent events in Afghanistan, where we've had a lot of battle casualties, and there has been a very warm and rather vigorous response by the general public. But I'm just interested in, for example, the negotiations which we have with our respective ministers of finance, how much we can rely on the public sympathy and understanding of how important these issues are.
Well, I don't know if my colleagues want to answer, perhaps the chairman of Defense Committee, Mr. Julio Miranda Calha, has a direct answer for that question. For myself, I just have a reflection already done about that. And my reflection is this one. There is always a great tension between what are the needs of defense and what is the perspective of public opinion. You cannot expect full support of public opinion for your expenses in armed forces. There must be always a very committed and pedagogic political behavior in order to explain to the people the importance of the armed forces, the importance of defense matters, the importance of security. And I think there is a gap between what is the reality of the security of a country and what is the perspective of the public opinion. That means even considering Afghanistan, that I think that is the most obvious situation, I must recognize, and that is absolutely true, that in all countries where there is an intense participation in Afghanistan, since there are some casualties, there is a great protest in public opinion considering that participation. I remember, for instance, Canada, that has had some casualties in the past, and I've noticed that the polls about the participation in Afghanistan have been very negative considering that intervention, considering the government's political matters in Afghanistan affair. That means we must be realistic. We cannot hope in order to have an absolutely synchrony in what is needed in the defense expenses and what is the public support. And that's the great challenge for politics, is to explain to the people that defense and security matters are vital for everyone, not only for the security of everyone, but also for the progress and development of the country. That's what we have been doing in Portugal. I think there is, as Mr. Miranda Calha told, an absolute synchrony in both the parties with the government responsibility in the past about this matter. There is a consensus about that matter. We see the President of the Republic and we see the Prime Minister absolutely in synchrony about this matter. There is no discontent about that. And that is needed in order to tell to the people that this expense in defense matters is fundamental. Of course, in crisis period, Lord Roper was talking about the Afghanistan situation and the need to an added effort considering the Afghan situation. That's true, but you must not forget that we live in a very difficult period where crisis is the main issue in political discussion and political agenda. And that means when there is a crisis, financial crisis, economical crisis, social crisis, defense matters naturally tend to be not a priority in political speech. So that's another difficulty we have in the horizon. Anyway, I think this is a way that we must go on doing our best in order to increase our effort, financial effort in defense matters. And absolutely, and I think that's the main question for me.
there is a great difference between what is the investment considering the GDP of the United States in defense matters, as you know, and GDP in Europe and European countries. And that means that in main questions, considering the main political questions, United States, they have, of course, a word that is stronger than the European word. We have the problem, of course, of the division of Europe. We have the problem of having not one telephone, but having different voices. But we have another problem, that is our effort in financial issues, considering defense, is very low when compared with the effort of America and of other countries, but special of America. That means that we have a long way to do and a long effort to make, and especially we need a bigger effort of political side in order to tell to the people how important is security and defense matters in their lives. That's the main question. Mr. Miranda Carda.
Only a simple word. Everything that was said by José Neto, Jorge Neto. Jorge Neto, it's absolutely consensual and correct. I had only one thing, and after I give the floor also to my colleague, Vice President. But the point is, for instance, that one. Yesterday, our committee received the Minister of Defense because we are improving our presence in Afghanistan. And the expression of the support of that mission was of all parties except the Communist Party and another radical party near Communist Party also. But all the other parts, so that means a great majority of the country is expressed there as a consensus and a support to that mission. That was not the same with the mission in the situation in Iraq. In Iraq, there was some kind of division and some kind of misunderstanding in the different levels of the state also. And for instance, the approval to this mission was at support of the National Council of Defense and of the government and after of the parliament. But with the situation in Iraq, there was different in that. And there was not a great, there was not a total, how to say, consensuality about that. That means that the situation relating to the country in general, there is a support, very positive support. Of course, when there is casualties, of course there is a problem. It's natural. But at the same time, there is a very important consensuality about that. And now, as we announced our position next future in Afghanistan, and things are okay in that way. But I would like to give the floor to my colleague, Correios.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Apenas uma palavra para dizer que nós em Portugal também já ultrapassámos a fase da conscrição e hoje o serviço militar em Portugal está profissionalizado e baseia-se no voluntariado ou no contrato. Portanto, nesse aspecto, digamos que a nossa situação é idêntica àquela que ocorrerá no Reino Unido. E em segundo lugar, para reforçar um ponto que se tem revelado de grande importância para a obtenção dos consensos que são necessários em matéria de defesa. É que é uma questão metodológica, mas que se apresenta como uma verdadeira questão substantiva, na medida em que na Comissão de Defesa todo o nosso trabalho é feito numa ótica do interesse nacional, com um claro esbatimento ou secundarização das posições partidárias
precisamente para que as soluções encontradas obtenham o maior consenso possível. Isso é o método que nós temos seguido na Comissão de Defesa e devo dizer-lhes que para isso tem contribuído significativamente o facto das reuniões da Comissão de Defesa serem à porta fechada e não abertas ao público nem à comunicação social. Muito obrigado.
One of the things we both have in common is we will be facing the electorate within the next year. You probably sooner than us. Is it usual to have elections campaigning during the summer in Portugal? And what are the likely issues and the main dominant issues in the next couple of months before the elections?
I think, obviously, the actual crisis is something that will be a dominant theme in the political agenda, in the electoral campaign. The Portuguese people is very worried about the economical situation, about unemployment, about the future. So I think that will be the main issue, will be the crisis and how to face the crisis, which kind of measures, which kind of politics could be achieved in order to overcome the problem of the economic and financial crisis. But of course, the social matters, I think, in crisis, social matters are always in the first place, they are the priority of the political agenda. The question of the differences between the gap between the rich and poor, the question about the education and the necessity of improving education. That's something that is a very old debate here in Portugal. I know that it's a debate going on also in the United Kingdom. I think you have a kind of a model that is the United States, and we know in the ranking the universities of the United States are in the first place, but even in Europe I think English universities are very well placed considering the European context, but we have a problem here in Portugal where we invest a lot in education, but we don't have the results we needed. It's not, I should say, a problem of nowadays. I read something about that 200 years ago. We are already the country with most people without culture and without instruction in Portugal. Even in the beginning of the 20th century, we have a dictatorship, as you know, with Salazar. Education was not the main issue of that period. And that's the reason why we have very, very deep problems, very deep roots, considering our failure in education. But for us, it's fundamental, because since we have not mineral resources, we have not oil, we have not gas, we need to invest especially in human actives, because that is our main resource for the future. So we need to improve our education in order to have a better economy, in order to have innovation, in order to have developed enterprises, in order to export our products. The main question is education, so I think that will be one of the big issues. And of course, why not telling? It's in the political agenda today. It's the problem of public finance and necessary of controlling the expenses, the public expense, and the necessity of being more accurate considering the managing the taxes of the people. That's something that will be in debate. If the government is going or not to increase the taxes, what about fiscal policy? Those are the main issues, I think, that will be in debate in campaign. Of course, defense matters, I think, shouldn't be in the first priority of political agenda. Security, that is a problem we have, a growing problem about security in the city, security of the people, that will be also in discussion. But mainly, I should say, the financial, economic and social crisis will be the main issue of debate.
Yes, Mr. Yeah.
Apenas me parece que seria importante perceber a vossa sensibilidade para dois assuntos que, de alguma maneira, aqui foram já abordados. Um deles é o Afeganistão, da perspectiva da solução. Gostaria de ouvir a vossa versão da solução na vossa perspectiva para o Afeganistão. E também, uma vez que se trata de um assunto no âmbito da NATO e das Nações Unidas, mas, sobretudo, na questão da NATO, me preocupa porque a solução que daí vier pode ou não comprometer o prestígio da NATO, na minha opinião, e por isso mesmo estarei preocupado com isso. Por outro lado, no âmbito do alargamento da comunidade europeia, e como aqui já se disse, os americanos têm apenas um telefone e nós temos vários telefones. Quando é que somos capazes de evoluir para, tendencialmente, também ter só um telefone? Era outra perspectiva que naturalmente gostaria de ver aí da vossa parte em matéria de defesa, para sentir a vossa sensibilidade. Muito obrigado.
I wonder whether I could comment on those two questions, but before doing so, comment on some of the earlier things that have been said. Because, of course, we have very much appreciated, and we appreciated during the period of NATO and subsequently, the fact that Portugal was not merely continental Portugal, but that the archipelago of Madeira and of the Azores were very important. They were even quite important during the Second World War. Some of us who are rather old can also remember, and for which, even though Portugal was neutral, we're extremely grateful. The second thing for which we're grateful is that Portugal was the other country which was prepared to dispatch its troops to Afghanistan without a caveat. I think it's sometimes rather difficult for us to understand why countries who have some of the most modern, the best trained, the best equipped forces in Europe are unable to use them as widely as possible because of political caveats. Now, I think we have to understand this. If you have been, as Germany was, in the Second World War, you are very cautious about how you use your forces apart from territorial defense. On the other hand, it is rather frustrating for other countries in NATO that there are these caveats which are imposed and which mean that other people have to put themselves and put their young people into harm's way. And if you live in the UK, and virtually every day you hear about our young people being put into very difficult situations, this is obviously a difficult problem. I'm going to come back to your questions, but before I do that, one of the other things which we really all need to think about rather carefully is, we have an enormous number of troops in the armies of the European members of NATO, or of the European Union. But the number of them who were able to deploy outside our own countries is very small. This is a very inefficient system, and we need to look rather carefully as to why we have such an inefficient system. We're not getting very many troops for the euros which we spend on defence, or even the pounds, which some of us still go on spending on defence. Before I come to questions, I just say one other thing. Probably one of the greatest British ministers of defence since the Second World War, Dennis Healy, said, "The first form of social security is defence. That is the security of one's society, and that is why it should not be forgotten when you come to consider resources being made available to it." I come then to the question of Afghanistan, which is a particularly difficult question in a country where we are losing quite a lot of troops. On the other hand, as far as NATO is concerned, if NATO is not able to succeed in Afghanistan, then we're going to not merely have a really serious rupture in terms of the North Atlantic Alliance, which would have all sorts of other implications, but also in terms of Afghanistan, we would be leaving an empty area, a failed state, in which it would be possible for other people to develop and to use forces. And although Portugal up till now has been relatively spared compared with some other European countries in terms of terrorism. It would not be a healthy situation for any of us. Therefore, we have got to try and think, but we've got to also think more imaginatively. We've got to try and think about what NATO has referred to sometimes as a comprehensive approach, in which we're not merely thinking about security, but we're also trying to create an environment in which it is possible for there to be economic and political developments which are positive, because it's only if we do that that we do have any chance of getting the thing right. You had a second question.
Enlargement.
Well, first of all, I believe that it is one of... I come from a country which was twice told, no, you can't join the European community, which was not something which we really appreciated. And therefore, when we came in, we appreciated it. We were also very pleased to see Portugal and Spain come in, because it was a way to bring you into a democratic family, which was absolutely essential after the changes which Portugal and Spain had gone through. Many of us felt that to bring in, and the fact that at the end of the Cold War, the countries of Central and Eastern Europe wanted to come in as well, was very important. And those of us who had to cope with the problems of the Balkans in the 1990s, when we perhaps didn't know quite how to deal with the breakup of former Yugoslavia, realized that unless we find some way of bringing the Western Balkans into the European Union, we're going to be faced with even greater problems. So it's going to be difficult. We've got to do better with those countries than we did with Bulgaria and Romania, who I think were probably let in without imposing sufficient constraints and conditions. But unless we pursue the question of enlargement to the Western Balkans, then we will have very serious problems. I leave to the last Turkey. The most difficult, but probably the most important. And we have to think very carefully about this. We have to spend our time, we have to negotiate it toughly to make sure that they come in and understand what they are joining. But I do not believe that we should take up the position which is taken up by some, which is to reject the concept of Turkey becoming a member of the European Union. Thank you.
Okay. You go, and then I'm going to go, okay? You go first. Yes. Two of us, and then back to you, okay?
Okay. On the issue of Afghanistan, I think it's a marathon rather than a sprint. That we've got to get it into our heads that we were in there for the long term, and we've already been in there for 8 years now, which is 2 years longer than the Second World War. But it's going to take a long-term commitment. And I think what the people of Afghanistan want is what the people in your country and our country want, which is the ability to earn a living and for their families to live safely. And for that, they need to know who's going to be here, not just this year or next year, but in 5 years, 10 years, and 15 years' time. So I think, because if they get it wrong and we pull out and the Taliban or Al-Qaeda move back in, then it's they who are going to take the brunt of this. So I think a long-term commitment is needed from the Western world and others. And if we don't have that, it will not benefit the people of Afghanistan. But I think we cast our minds back to that's where Al-Qaeda set its plans for the USA, for Spain, the Madrid bombings, the UK bombings, but also their associates in Russia, in Chechnya, in China, in India. So this is not just about Afghanistan, it's not just about the West, it's about global security. And if we don't get on top of it, then the world will suffer. And for that to happen, we need unity. And we're grateful that Portugal has stood by us and the US and shown a united front. And we need more of that from our NATO allies. On the issue of the EU, I think we should appreciate what... I think we, it's probably the most Eurosceptic nation in Europe. Our Euroscepticism has spread across the rest of Europe. And I think we should take a stand in explaining to the UK population about the benefits of being a member of the EU, the fact that we've had political stability, that we used to have world wars or continental wars that started in Europe. We no longer have that. But also using our economic strength of an area of 500 million, perhaps if Turkey joins 600 million people, which will be the biggest, already is the biggest trading bloc in the world, with the highest income and the biggest number of people. We need to use that for the benefit not just of ourselves, but also on human rights, on slave labour, on prison labour. We can dictate it as a bloc of 600 million people. We can't as a bloc of 10 million or even 60 million people.
I wonder if I could just comment and then perhaps over to you. Like many of us, I was in Afghanistan. I was in Afghanistan earlier this year. Now, 3 days in Helmand doesn't make me an expert. It makes me think I know a great deal, and one has to be careful. But I think Afghanistan is an enormous challenge. I just don't think we can say, let's get out of it and leave them to it. I think the consequences for us, for NATO, for the people of Afghanistan would be unacceptable. But I think we have to be clever. I mean, I personally think, and this is just hindsight, I think Iraq was a big mistake because of it was wrong, and also because if we'd put our efforts into Afghanistan, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. In other words, if we'd concentrated on Afghanistan and not got tied up in Iraq. But that's water under the bridge. I watched the Afghan army being trained. I think we've got a long way to go, but I think we've got to put our resources into training the Afghan army and the police. I think we've got to do something about a situation where the army can drive the Taliban out of a village. The army haven't got enough troops to hold it. They go back and the Taliban come back, and then the Afghan people say, this is hopeless, we want protection from the Taliban. So I think we've got to look at this and make sure that we've got the resources not just to drive the Taliban out of areas, but to hold them, and then use that space to do proper development and reconstruction in Afghanistan. Now, that's not original. A lot of people are saying it, but we've got to actually make that happen. On enlargement, I agree with what's been said. I'll just say about Turkey, that if we say no to Turkey, and at the moment they've got a lot of things to achieve in terms of human rights, criminal justice, proper administration, and so on, but if we say no to Turkey, they're always saying to a large, moderately secular Islamic country that we don't want you, and they will have to look further east. And I don't think Europe is going to be better off for that. I think Europe will be in a more vulnerable position. And somehow or other, we've got to persuade our friends in Germany, in Austria, and France that it is important that we do not say no to Turkey. We have to say to the Turks, there are many things you've got to achieve. You've achieved a few. There are many more you've got to achieve before it's acceptable. But we would, if you achieve the standards, then we'll welcome you.
Thank you very much. I would like to close the meeting.
There's another question from Mr. Patienzel.
No, just very brief remarks, if I may. First of all, is the following. General public wants that wars come to a very rapid victory with the minimum of casualties, and ministers of finance wants this result would be achieved with the minimum of budget resources. Both constraints are impossible, because wars are always more severe, take more time than it is expected or planned. So it's the duty of politicians to give to the general public a view of the situation, saying the effort has to be a long one, persistent one, and very focused on what is really important. And I would say, stressing the same point as you have done, sir, regarding Turkey, and just to end up my comments, to say that the best approach is really to convince our members, countries and colleagues which are resisting the idea of having Turkey as a full member, we should try to convince them. And I believe this new event, this result of the Nabucco gas zone, it's a very important point together. Although I share the view, it will be a very tough and difficult negotiation, and we should not be very too much soft in this, because at the end of the day, if we are too soft, we will lose quite a lot. Thank you very much.
Yep.
I've been very impressed by the views of Turkish colleagues on the question of Turkey, because one only has to come to this city and see some of the things which were done in this city by the Ottomans and other people at an earlier stage. If there was a country in Europe which might be against having involving an Islamic country, it might be Portugal, because Portugal suffered at one stage because of that, and the fact that there is now such a positive attitude in this country toward bringing Turkey into the European Union is something I find extremely encouraging.
Thank you very much. I would like to say, as a kind of closure remarks of this meeting, that we share most of the opinions that were told today about Afghanistan and about Turkey. About Afghanistan, I know also the problem. I think you were quite right about the fact that there's a long-term war. And that is one of the constraints we have. I think people is not already aware of that fact. And there is a gap between what the reality of Afghanistan and the fact that it is a long-term war and the perception of the public opinion. They don't have that perception. So there is a work that the politicians must do in the future in order to prepare the people that this war is a difficult one, a long-term one, and you must be ready for that. Of course, casualties should be always a problem for that adhesion to the war in Afghanistan, but we must prepare our people for that. And of course, as you told, Lord Roper, and I know that's the main problem, it's necessary to build the infrastructures in the field, not only infrastructures, physical infrastructures, but also human infrastructures concerning armed forces and police, Afghan police, in order to replace our armed forces. And that is something difficult when we think about the economy in Afghanistan still dependent of the opium culture, and when we remember the importance that the opium culture still has in Afghan people nowadays. And how to replace that dependence of opium culture, that's the main question. We have not yet find a solution for that, and I think that is crucial for the problem of Afghanistan, is to build an economic support for the people in that region. About Turkey, I also agree with you. I know very well the situation here in Portugal. We have no problem about Turkey adhesion. There is a certain consensus about that, maybe on account of historical reasons. We have, as you know, Arabs here in Portugal in the beginning of our nation. But we also feel, even our president has been recently in Turkey, and he told that in the Turkish parliament, we feel that the entrance in Turkey in the European community is fundamental for the peace, security and stability of Europe. Do you know that? Not only on account of, I think, 70 million of Turkey. It's a kind of the influence Turkey has in all that region. I remember, for instance, South Caucasus. I've been there. And the Ottoman Empire has still nowadays a very longa manus in that region. And we must not forget that. It's not Turkey itself. It's all the region that has a great cultural influence of Turkey from the Ottoman Empire. And that must be always emphasized when we discuss the problem of Turkey. Anyway, we know there are some different opinions, not only in the United Kingdom, but especially in France and Germany. But we shall wait and see. I think that we are facing, just to end my speech, we are facing a very thrilling and a very interesting period. And I should like to quote a prime minister, an old British prime minister, that in a very difficult period of his country told that what the country needed was, it was better to have a prime minister with a first-class temper and a second-class brain, then a prime minister with a first-class brain and a second-class temper. I think we face a period where politicians should have a first-class temper and a second-class brain, if possible, a first-class temper and a first-class brain. But I prefer the first-class temper and first-class brain, because it's a thrilling period. We must be cool. We must face adversity and must be prepared to face difficulties in order to overcome in order to have success. Thank you very much.
Well, excuse me, but I would like to say two remarks. I'm not going to add more remarks because my colleague George Neto said everything, and I agree with everything. And as you noticed, we are all different parties, but we agree in everything, what is very interesting. But this is the substance of our committee and the issues about defense that has a good relation between all the parties. But I would like to profit this part of our meeting, the end of our meeting, to say that it was very interesting to have this contact and this relation. And we are very interested in the relation between our parliaments. I think that we have some kind of identities that are very important. And in a moment where we are going and we are having transformation in NATO, you know, we are now dealing with a new strategic concept that is going to take place. When a moment we are going to have the integration of France in the institutes of NATO, it's a moment also we must think a little bit more about the Europe of defense. And this is very important. And I think that is a good contribution of our countries because the links between us are very similar. And so I think that we must think about that, reflect and improve that because it's important to our values that are the main target that we must think in all these things. And I profit the opportunity also to give you a remembrance of our parliament. I received a pen, perhaps it was to work, but I'm going to give you another kind of gift. It's not necessary to work, but to put them somewhere in your House of Lords or House of Commons, I don't know, or near the door where the Queen appears to knock three times. But I would like to give this to as a remembrance of our Committee of Defense.
Well, that's very nice. That's very kind. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. That's lovely. Thank you.
First of all, it's necessary to know if you are elected and if we should be or not MPs in next legislature. That we don't know. But of course, I'll take note of your invitation and I'll tell the president of our parliament that this invitation is already done. And a delegation from Portuguese parliament, of course, should be there in a...
Thank you. We can't reciprocate the scale of your hospitality.
No. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.